Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail where you can in turn inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. Well, how is a training program like project management? Better yet, how is our faith like project management? We're going to kind of talk about that here in a little bit. And then I'm going to tell you a touching story about an Olympic athlete from 1968 I think you're going to love. And joining me for those stories and a whole bunch more is Upward Running Director Mitchell Hollis.
Thanks for having me, Dean. So I just, right before you got here, I just had a video call with some of the greatest people in the world. And they definitely have the best accents in the world. Oh. I had a video call with Val and Tom.
Did you really?
Yeah. Oh. They were over in Ireland, and yeah, we were talking about some stuff on the app, and they had some questions, and so it was really neat to get to see them. Get, you know, we see them on social a good bit, but Val and Tom are the only people, you know, I love to barbecue, and they stayed with us one weekend when they were here in Dalton. And I smoked some baby back ribs. And they're the only person that referred to my baby back ribs as lovely.
That's right.
Lovely.
That's right. That's their phrase.
I mean, that was like the best compliment you could get.
Yeah. So. That's what you get from Northern Ireland folks, huh?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. But they're doing great. It was great to see them.
Great folks. Well, I had something weird happen to me yesterday I've never had before. Well, actually, I had two things happen together that I've never had happen together, although I've had them, these two things done separately. I'm driving into Cahutta, and as I'm driving into Cahutta, there's a police officer sitting on the side of the road. And as I passed him, he turned on his blue lights. Now, I've had that before. I've been caught by the police
before.
Now,
let's explain. This is not like driving into downtown Atlanta, Georgia.
Correct.
It's just you're pulling up to the one stop sign.
Yes, in Cahutta. This is before the stop sign.
Yeah.
I'm coming in from Chattanooga direction.
Yeah.
And the police lights go on. I'm like, I really wasn't going fast. Or at least I didn't think I was going fast. He pulls me over and he comes to my window and I'm like, seriously, was I really going too fast? And he looked at me. He goes, you're going 50. Now, where he caught me, I think, was a 45. I don't know if it was 45. I think it's a 45 where he caught me. So I wasn't. And I thought, really? You're going to give me a ticket for 5 miles an hour over the speed limit? He said, and he looks at me. He goes, no, here's what I wanted to ask you. He said, I saw who it was. And I was in the church this morning, and you were talking about this running class. I want to know if I can be in your running class. So you flagged me down.
It's a good thing you held that attitude, that what you wanted to say. You held that tongue.
Yeah, well, he's a friendly guy, and I was, you know. Anyway, it was funny. I've never had anybody pull me over with blue lights before to ask me a question about an upward running class.
So. That's I think that's a first.
Yeah. Pretty good stuff.
So is he going to join it?
Yes.
Cool.
He is. And I'm hoping he's going to get some of the other police officers to join.
You need
as well.
To make sure to send in this podcast so he can hear the story.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's about time to begin Couch to Marathon for next year, right?
It is. Yeah. Got a lot of people coming on board, a lot of people signing up. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
And we're all going to meet it at the Big Beach Marathon again.
Yeah.
Big Beach Marathon, Half Marathon.
Yeah, and we're working on, remember I said last week, this is going to be our Run Club get-together for the year. So go ahead and put the date on your calendar. I'm working on all the details for the meetup and the dinner and all that kind of stuff right now. So details will be rolling out here in the next 30, 45 days. But go ahead and get it on your calendar. Big Beach Marathon 2026.
Yeah. All you folks who are disappointed that we're not having anything in April here in Dalton, just hang on to that money.
Right.
And use it to go to Gulf Shores in next January.
Because they have marathon, half marathon. And from what you said last week, I still haven't called and confirmed, but it sounds like they're going to have a 10K and a 5K.
Yep.
So
that's, you're going to have, man, choices. Yeah. Choices.
Maybe you could do one or two of them.
Yeah, well, that's the way they're setting it up. So you can do
really?
Yes, so that you can do multiple races.
I need to get Nikki on the phone after we remind me to do that before you leave. We'll get her on the phone and confirm all that. Not saying I don't trust what you're saying.
Yeah, well.
It's just I haven't heard it yet.
Well, you know, I mean, you know how it is. Sometimes people speak out of turn,
yeah,
too.
I mean, you could like be thinking of a race in Arizona for all I know.
I could be. You know me.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Age. Our post of the week comes from Mary Priolo. Countdown Mary, we know
Countdown
her as.
Countdown Mary.
She says, sometimes the pictures do lie. Look at the smile on my face. Look at the thumbs up. You would never guess this was the worst race I ever ran. Being from the area, I have run many, many races along the same course we ran last weekend at the marathon graduation race. I run and train in the brutal Florida sun during August. But this weekend, that unusually hot and humid February morning took its toll on my body. Legs cramped at mile 19 and I could not get them to release. Walked a lot of those last 7 miles. Finally, at the end, the last half mile or so, I just sucked it up and ran. Dean said I was flying. I was just trying to quickly finish to stop the hurt. While the body did not cooperate, underneath that smile below was a weekend filled with friendship. It was knowing my running partner ran her race with endurance. It was knowing that people were there cheering me on regardless how long they had to wait for me. It was knowing that even though this one race didn't go as planned, it was okay because a finish is a finish. It was knowing that there will be other races, some in the very near future. And it was knowing at the center of it all, he was there, as he always is, carrying me through. Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. Matthew 11:28-30.
I saw this picture of Mary.
Yeah, and I'll put that on the podcast. So
I mean, it's an incredible picture. You would think, you know, she's just rocking it, which she did.
Yeah,
but it wasn't up to maybe her standards. But
well, her words didn't match what she was telling me. She was telling me about how she was struggling, and I'm running beside her, and I'm thinking, I'm having a hard time keeping up with her. I'm like, she's flying.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was good stuff.
Good job, Mary.
Good job. Yep. And it's great to realize this moment too, right? In the moment, whenever you're struggling, mm-hmm. it's really awesome when you can realize that, yeah, I'm struggling. Yeah, it's a bad day from a race standpoint, but there's all these other reasons to be positive.
Sure.
It's really cool. You know, last week I shared this story about a guy who said something to me in the middle of one of the worst races I've ever run. And it just made the whole – think what it does is it puts things in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important. Because a lot of times, I mean, you know me, I get serious about running and you can beat yourself up over it.
Sure.
But it's not the most important thing in the world, no matter how you measure it.
Exactly.
So that's what she was doing. She was putting it in perspective. And it's cool to realize that there's other people there that are really invested in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was invested in what Mary was doing. I couldn't wait to see her, and I wanted to hear about her race, and I wanted to, you know, so that makes it even more fun when you go to a place and you realize there's other people around you. They're not only glad to be around you and hang around you, but they're rowing in the same boat as you,
mm-hmm.
and I think that makes a difference. Our run of the week comes from Karen Hamrick. My body is tired and sore, but my heart is full of joy. Laura West, my Bubba Run Gum buddy from our first Run for God Big Beach Marathon, traveled from snowy Michigan to join me here in Oak Island to run the Run Oak Island Mini Ultra. I would never have met Laura without the Run for God ministry. I have met and been so blessed by all those I have had the privilege to meet through this program. God put Laura in my path at the Big Beach Marathon when I had hit the wall and was really struggling. She stopped and made sure I was okay and then said, "You need caffeine. Do you have any run gum?" I chewed some and was able to regroup and finish that first marathon. This year, when I was unable to come to St. Pete, she came here to run instead. What a great friend and blessing. Yesterday, we completed 26.25 miles for God's glory. Talked to the folks about God and shared our stories. It was an amazing and blessed day. God was with us every step, and we trusted Him with the details. I am happy to report that this time I did not hit the wall and took 1 hour off that first marathon finish time. Laura finished strong with the most amazing smile on her face at the finish. God blessed us richly.
A 1 hour PR.
That's a pretty
You don't hear
impressive.
That often.
No, you don't. That's crazy, right? Yeah, it's a cool story.
Yeah.
Karen is another one of those Team Coolidge people,
she
too.
She is.
And, but of course, she got Laura comes from way up there in cold country. I'm sure she was glad to come south.
Sure she was, yeah.
but both of them, they're always smiling. And I'll put, another photo up to let everybody know who they are. This is kind of what Mary was talking about on steroids. Mm-hmm. Mary was talking about how you make these connections with these people at these races. And in this case, you're talking about a deep, deep connection that was formed just because two people were on the race course at the same time mm-hmm. with the same goal.
Yeah. You know, I was visiting, and next year we're going to have our schedules more lined up. I mentioned last week I wasn't in St. Pete because I was visiting some churches with Weighted Upward. And that's the one thing that we talked about is we went into all these churches, and these were past Upward churches, so we were introducing them to the running program. And it's like, I talked about people getting out of the car at races and running up and hugging each other who have never physically met, mm-hmm. but they knew each other because of this ministry. And Dean, that's the hardest thing to explain. It's like the people we were telling that to, they were like kind of a blank stare on their face.
Yeah.
And they just, I don't know if they didn't believe it or it just didn't make sense, or maybe I wasn't explaining it right. But it's honestly something you don't know until you experience it. And that's the beauty of this club is those relationships. And just like this story here, just like so many other stories that we know all kinds of friendships from all over the country. I mean, I was on the phone with two people from Northern Ireland this morning.
Yeah.
That happened because of what God is doing in this ministry. And Val and Tom, and they're doing their own thing in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, it's incredible. And you and I have talked about it, you know, sitting here before. This is when we know it's God, because there's no way that a hillbilly from Georgia and a Yankee from Jersey could have ever come up with this, right?
It's true.
But it's God is the one that knits all this together, and it's just so fun to watch.
Yeah, it is. That's great. Our trivia question from last week: what is the distance of the marathon in kilometers? So everybody knows the marathon is 26 miles, 26.2 miles. I don't know how many people know that it's 26 miles, 385 yards is the actual distance of a marathon. But how long is it in kilometers? Well, it turns out it is 42.195 kilometers. So that means it's 42 kilometers and 195 meters. Isn't that cool the way the metric system works like that? It just makes sense. A lot of people have trouble with the metric system, but I like the metric system personally.
Have you seen, I'm going to interrupt you here for a second. Have you seen, it's a Saturday Night Live skit, which I don't endorse Saturday
yes.
Night Live, but Nate Bargatze,
yes.
who's an incredibly clean comedian.
Yes.
He did a skit on Saturday Night Live.
The Founding Fathers
talking about the numbering system of how America does everything.
Yes,
and it's just hilarious. So if you want a good laugh, a good clean laugh, look up Saturday Night Live, Nate Bargatze, Founding Fathers. It's just hilarious. And if you don't know anything about Nate, is it Bargatze?
Bargatze.
This guy will have you rolling.
Yeah.
And it's just clean.
Yeah. He
humor.
Just talks about normal everyday things.
But he's so dry.
Yeah.
He never cracks a smile.
Yeah.
Ever cracks a smile.
Yeah.
But I mean, he has me in the floor rolling. I want to go watch him live.
I know. It'd be fun. Well, obviously, that means a half marathon is 21 kilometers, if you've ever wondered that. You know, the first marathon distance was 40K, was right around 40K, about 25 miles. 40K is almost exactly 25 miles. But its current distance was made in 1921. They adopted it as a formal, this is what a marathon is, 26 miles to 385 yards. And it's been that way ever since. We're going to talk more about that at the end of this podcast. So,
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
Okay, so let me tell you what we need. We need stories. We need you to send in your running / God stories. And we need them now. So don't wait any longer. Go home. Write it down. Go to upwardrunning.com. Submit your story and submit your story. We need to hear it.
Let's take it one step further because we're about to start. I mean, literally within days, we're starting the Couch to Marathon. We've asked for 2 years for somebody to submit their story before they start this challenge. Mm-hmm. And then we want you to resubmit your story when you complete this challenge. And we would love to have the opportunity to have a special podcast a year from now where we put those two stories together.
Yeah.
So if you are starting the Couch to Marathon Challenge, maybe you've never run and you think, that's a lot of pressure to put on myself. It's not. It's people need to hear what you're going through. And then when you finish it, to hear the whole story, it'll be incredible. So
yeah.
I dare you, if it takes a dare, if you're one of those people like I am, if you dare me to do something, I dare you to submit your story. We want to hear your story before you start the Couch to Marathon Challenge.
Absolutely. So I got this cool story sent to me by Angie Hawkins just last night. She sends me this story, and I'm like, man, you talk about timely. Mm-hmm. This was perfect timing. And here's the story. I'm going to put this photo up because this is a lady. And if you can imagine the picture, she's got blood all down her cheek. She's clearly injured. She's got blood on her shirt. It's an Instagram post, and it says this.
And a handful of daisies,
yeah. She says, at 68 years old, Anadina Modesta Perez proved that determination knows no limits. During the Marathon de Meridiano in 2023 in El Hierro, she was the oldest participant. Sorry about the Spanish. The oldest participant to complete the challenging race. Despite suffering a fall that left her with a bruised face, Anadina refused to give up. She pushed forward, crossing the finish line with unwavering resilience and inspiring everyone around her. Her story is a powerful reminder that passion and perseverance can overcome any obstacle at any age. You are an inspiration, Modesta. Keep going.
Yeah.
It's a pretty cool story, this lady that, 68 years old, you fall down and you hit your head and you're bleeding from the eye. You're going to be like, I need to go to the hospital.
That's going to hurt anybody at any age.
Yeah. And this lady's like, no, I still got some miles left. It's pretty cool. I love it. It reminds me that Big Beach, a couple of years ago, we had a lady who fell less than 300 meters from the finish line. I almost feel a little guilt. I feel like I might have been crowding her and made her turn a little too quick, maybe. I don't know. I hope that's not the case. But she tripped on an uneven place on the ground, and she went down pretty hard. But she got back up. She had the best attitude. She just kept smiling all the way to the finish line, and she made sure she finished that thing. So, I like it when you see somebody who is just singularly focused on what they're doing. I remember I had somebody in one of my Run for God classes years ago, and it was the mayor's wife. Mm-hmm. And she was in that class. Well, I was cheering for her, and I was excited for her, and it was a big struggle for her. Mm-hmm. She did really, really well, but her goal was to not walk at all mm-hmm. in the 5K, and she never did it before that day. And on that day, she's coming in. She's 100 yards from the finish line. And I'm like, you did it. You did it. I'm shouting in her face. I'm like, yeah. And I'm holding my hand up to give her a high five. She will not even look at me. Her face is just straightforward, looking at the finish line.
You're like a distraction. At this
yes.
point.
Get out of here until I finish. And afterwards, she goes, "I'm so sorry, but I had to finish that." And I'm like, "I get it. I completely understand. Yeah. I like that singular focus." Well, this week's story will be a good one for people who like engineering things and these ultra-organized people. Mm-hmm. So you should like this one.
I do love it.
This one comes from Kent Ogle. It's called Project Management. By strict definition, project management is the discipline of planning, coordinating, and controlling resources and procedures to bring about a result. That's how I've been earning a paycheck for over 20 years. When most of your experience is in leading various projects, project management habits kick in and you tend to see every new challenge in life as an opportunity to bring about a desired outcome by balancing constraints such as time, money, and quality, even weight loss, spiritual, and fitness goals. To reach a goal, a good PM or project manager will balance all inputs, anticipate challenges, and define outcomes. Even if the project is large or has never been accomplished before, they can break everything into small incremental units that are easier to achieve. It wasn't until I viewed losing weight as a project to manage that I achieved any permanent results. I've battled food addictions and weight issues most of my adult life. Gym memberships, exercise equipment, and fad diets, all promising quick and easy results or your money back, usually ended in frustration and depression. Everyone knows the basic formula for weight loss. Burn more calories than you take in. But it doesn't happen overnight. You don't hit your weight goal in a week or any more than a beginner can run their first 5K after 3 workouts. I guess it's human nature to be impatient, and although I know without a doubt that most things take time and must progress incrementally, I still hope for shortcuts and quick results. I want to burn that donut off now. I want that project finished now. I want to get that promotion now. I want to be a mature Christian now. Oops. Did I just admit I have spiritual impatience too? Yeah. If I'm honest with myself, I have to admit that I get frustrated with bad news or stagnant growth or just flat out fail in living up to what I profess. I know I have to keep working on my projects, my work project, my fitness projects, my spiritual projects, if I want to continue to realize the benefits. Think of the things you've learned how to do in life. Did you just wake up one morning with a new skill? Of course not. You had to learn how to do everything. Sometimes it came easily, sometimes not. And things that come easily for me might not for you. That's why I like the Upwards Running Run for God program so much. It presents two big goals: run a 5K and get closer to God, and breaks them down into steps that present an easy to understand approach to reaching your goals. And now that I know how to be successful, I want to help others realize their goals too. So I'm upfront with people when they express interest in joining our group, and I approach it like another project to manage. I explain to them the resources needed, the time to achieve their goal, and the benefit they will realize. I challenge every new class the first night to give this program 30 minutes of workouts 3 times a week over the next 12 weeks, and it will change your life. Those who come along for the journey and are intentional about their commitment to the program find it to be true.
I knew Kent and I were kindred spirits.
You do, yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, he makes so many good points here, but one being a conversation that I just had with one of the participants in our 5K challenge at my church that's going through right now. She come up to me, this lady come up to me on Saturday, and she said, "Hey, Mitchell," she said, "hey, I'm just not going to be able to get my third workout in this week." That's okay, ain't it? She's asking the wrong person.
Yeah, wrong person.
And I said, "What are you doing right before bed tonight?" This was a lady that was in the very first Run for God class ever taught.
So she knew better.
She knows better. She knows who she is as she's listening to this. But we try to predetermine ways of predetermined excuses. Like, yeah. I'm not going to be able to get my third workout in for the week. Well, this was like Saturday at lunch. And she had to.
Still got a day and a half.
Sunday at dark. You can't find 30 minutes to get your workout in. Now, I'm not picking on her, but because we all do this.
Sure.
The answer is, yes, you can. The question is, what are your priorities?
Yeah.
And if you make this, just like Kent said, he urges people on the first night, set aside 3 30-minute blocks a week, and it will change your life. And that's absolutely true.
Yep.
But we have to determine this in our mind before it starts that this is what we're going. This is why I say put it in your calendar. Put 3 30-minute runs in your calendar. So you make that time. But anytime we try to, if we don't predetermine what we're going to do, then we're sure to fall victim to changing things midstream. It's easy to do midstream. Holly and I went up to the Riverwalk this past weekend, and we were going to do a 6-mile walk, and I took my rucksack. Mm-hmm. And so I've never gone 6 miles with 40 pounds on my back. And I thought, oh, that'd be okay. Well, I got in three and a half miles in. I was struggling. She's like, well, we can turn around right here. And I'm like,
set out to do 6 miles.
I said six. And of course, my lovely wife, she's like, it's not.
She's so compassionate.
Yeah. She saw me suffering and she was like, we can just turn around. Like, no. And I mean, it whipped me, but I got it done. So the point being, predetermine what you're going to do and then set your mind to it and make it happen.
You know what I find interesting about what you're saying is that we do that with a lot of things. So think about school, whether you think about college or you think about, elementary and secondary school. I've always said that having a college degree only now, if you're a doctor, you're a doctor. You learn particular skills, whatever. Yeah. That I'm not talking about necessarily about those things. But for a general college degree, what a college degree does is it proves to me that you can take on a long-term project, a 4-year project, and finish it and do it successfully.
Sure.
We don't think about, when we talk about college, that thing that we're paying a lot of money for to gain a piece of paper at the end of it, we don't think about, well, do I have time to make it to class?
Mm-hmm.
We just do it because we know we have to do it because we have to finish that class and we have to do that thing. And at the end, there's a reward for it. Mm-hmm. Well, a training program is the same thing.
Sure.
It's just, and it's a shorter plan than a college degree is.
Sure.
So, it's a
But
simple.
The beauty of it is that skill you learned called discipline and tenacity and grit, because it takes all that.
That's right.
To complete a training plan. It really has, I mean, it has, yes, it's great to finish and do a race, but what it does to every other area of your life is incalculable.
That's right.
You just can't imagine what other areas of your life are going to look like because of those principles you learned to run a 5K.
Yeah.
Seems so inconsequential, but it has huge consequences.
Absolutely. And listen, don't hear me say that I think a college degree is worthless. That's not what I said.
Right.
I have a degree from probably a top 5% school. Right. So don't hear me say that's not what I said.
Right.
Luke 14:28-33. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? Lest after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king, going to make war against another king, does not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is still a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks conditions of peace. So likewise, whoever of you does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple. This is so important. Before we get into anything, we need to understand what we're getting ourselves into.
Yeah.
And we fail at this so often because we expect things. We look at things from the best possible outcome perspective. And then when it doesn't go best possible direction, mm-hmm. we give up because it didn't go as smoothly as we wanted it to go, we have to think about the things that can go wrong. When you get into a training program, you need to understand that there are going to be days where you're not going to want to do it. There's mm-hmm. going to be days where you're going to be sick. There's going to be days where, I mean, any number of things can go wrong, and you need to be prepared for those things. Mm-hmm. And if you're prepared for them, then you can get through those things. But if you're not prepared for them, it's real easy to give up.
Yeah. So I've mentioned that two books that I've read recently, one is Do Hard Things and one is called The Comfort Crisis. And both of those books talk about the idea. It talks about the culture of, it kind of goes into the everybody gets a trophy, you know, movement back in the 90s and how that was so wrong. And they talk about the idea that if you tell yourself that something is going to be hard, you are far more likely to succeed than telling yourself it's going to be easy. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the trap we fall into. We're like, oh, I can do that. There's lack of humility. There's hubris. It's just like, you know, I'm like Teflon. I can do this. Those are the people that typically fail. Where the ones that are realistic and they really sit down and think about, okay, this is going to be hard. What am I going to do when it gets hard? They're far more likely to succeed in those cases.
Yeah, and that's true. But it's not even just hard things. So let me give you an example. I was thinking about what's my latest project I got going on? My latest project I got going on is I'm going to install a new camera at our church for mm-hmm. our live stream. Well, in order to do that, I have like six or seven different items that I had to purchase and pull all these things together to plan what I am going to do. Well, what happens if I went out and I bought a camera and I went to the church and started trying to put the thing in and mm-hmm. I didn't have the other things I needed?
Yeah.
Then what happens is I get frustrated
right.
because now I've got to stop what I'm doing. I got to order a thing or go get a thing, and then I got to come back and I got to start over again. Now I'm going to miss another thing, and then I'm going to have to stop again. And we get so frustrated at that because we didn't anticipate it. Whereas if I've got all the stuff I need up front, I start it, and could something go wrong in the middle? Mm-hmm. It could, but by and large, I'm going to have all the pieces I need to fix whatever I need to do, and I'll finish it instead of having to abandon things in the middle of the stream, which is what happens when we get into a training program and we don't make any provisions for things not going right.
I'm just
going
to fit it in.
Yeah, yeah. When you do that—
It never works.
Yeah, it doesn't work because when something comes up, you just make an excuse and you— blow it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joshua 24:15 says, "And it seems evil, and if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." This goes back to I've talked about this before. It goes back to deciding.
Yeah.
There is no, you've already decided. When I talk about I've run every day except for one in the last 13 and a half years, how did I get there? Mm-hmm. I don't go into every day going, am I going to run today? I go into the day thinking, when am I going to run today? I'm thinking past the sale. Mm-hmm. There is no sale on whether I'm going to run. It's what am I going to do once I decide to do it. It's deciding. Your house, I know, is run the same way my house is run. Mm-hmm. When it comes to decision time, there's a book that we use
right.
that decides how we're going to make our decisions.
Right.
And it's already decided. There's not an option. If something comes in and it's questionable from a morality standpoint, We have a yardstick we're going to measure it by.
Sure.
And we're going to go there regardless of whether it's painful or not, right?
Yeah. It kind of reminds you of yesterday in church, our pastor was in Revelation 3:15, and it's where God says, "Because you're neither hot nor cold, I will spew you out of my mouth." I don't know why this verse in Joshua brings that up for me, because I think it's alluding to Revelation 3:15, where it's better to decide. I'm not saying that deciding not to walk with Christ is good. That is not what I'm saying. But the worst thing we can do is to halfway do anything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the Lord is talking about in Revelation 3:15. He doesn't want somebody who's half in, half out, lukewarm, as he calls it, because that only creates confusion mm-hmm. to those who we might be trying to reach. We're trying to reach somebody for Christ, and over here we've got somebody who says they're living like Christ, living for Christ, but their actions don't show it. That just causes all kinds of problems. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with what you're talking about. We need to decide, because the worst thing you can do is to look, I don't know the right word for it, wishy-washy, I guess, is for lack of a better word. Be bold in your commitments. If you mm-hmm. decide, I'm going to do the 5K challenge, don't come out week two and already be trying to figure out how, because that's, I would rather have somebody say, no, I'm not going to do the 5K challenge. Much better place to be than to put you in a group of people and then you start trying to wiggle out, make excuses, this and that. That brings down a whole team. That's right. When we have somebody like that in our faith, that brings down our whole community of faith. When you have people who are in and out, in and out, in and out, it creates lukewarmness for everybody.
Yep.
If you stay around that too much.
Absolutely it does. It's infectious, isn't it? In a bad way. Romans 12:1-2 says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God.
So let me go back to what I was just saying for just a minute, because it ties into this verse mm-hmm. too. Charlie's sermon yesterday was talking about the idea that we must act or we will conform. A lack of acting is apathy.
Yeah.
And renewing is not a singular action. And what he did is he had a bottle of water that he just had there, and he said, this water's been sitting here for 2 weeks, and it's not the kind of water you want. It's not cold, and it's not hot where you could make tea with it. It's just room temperature, and I personally like room temperature. Yeah. But the point was, you know, if it were coffee, people get hot coffee or they get iced coffee. Again, I don't know why anybody drinks iced coffee. There's something wrong with them. But people like the contrast. They like one end or the other. And he said, when we become Christians and we're not constantly renewing, again, that is not a singular action. When we are not constantly renewing our mind, if we stop that, then we become lukewarm by default. So many times we think, well, I've done this big thing for Christ, I can cruise for a while. You know, the whole Run for God story. I thought I was going to teach that first class, and me and God, we were going to be square. I was going to be done. That's not how this works.
Yeah.
It's a constant action that we have to do every day, renewing our mind. Otherwise, we become apathetic and we become lukewarm. And by God's own word, it says we make him sick when we get there.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the difference. Have you ever heard the difference between what a pig and a chicken bring to breakfast? You know, a pig is all in for breakfast. A chicken just has a contribution to make. Right. You know, when you're just making a contribution, that's not good enough for God.
Right.
God wants us all in.
Yeah.
Yes. Question. What can you do now that you once thought you'd never accomplish? This was so quick for me. The answer to this one was so fast for me. A lot of times I read these questions, I'm like, I don't know. Let me think. Not this one. Mine is hold my temper. I am so much better at holding my temper than I used to be. And I'm going to tell you what, I do it all the time. You've heard me praise God for it, because mm-hmm. it is all him. Mm-hmm. Because I was terrible at just man, flying off the handle. And I'm so much better. And I'm still, I still have a ways
still
to go.
Still a work in progress.
I'm still working on it. But man, he's taken me a long way.
And, yeah, it used to be a lot of things set you off, but now it's just technology.
Yeah. Actually, technology doesn't bother me as much anymore either.
I don't know. I've been sitting in this room getting ready for a podcast once or twice.
That's been a while.
But no, I mean, seriously, in the 15 or how long have we been knowing each other now? Gosh, 15 years?
Yeah, I guess so.
Right, I've seen a huge change.
Close, yeah.
A huge change. Mm-hmm. And that's not Dean.
Right.
That's God. It's all God.
100%.
For sure.
Yep. Yeah, and I remember a time when I used to say, and this is what we do, okay? So if you're out there listening to this, you may be in this boat, okay? And I am stepping on your toes, if that's the way you take it. Mm-hmm. If you're saying, that's just the way I am, mm-hmm. that's what I said.
Yeah.
That's what I said about my temper was, you know, I'm just, I was born in New Jersey. I'm an Irish kid. You know, that's just who I am. No, that's not who I have to be. God mm-hmm. can transform you into something much better. And he has transformed me. And he's still working on me. And I'm going to be even better mm-hmm. a year from now. But don't get that's the way I'm made thing.
Yeah.
With some kind of a character flaw that's not a good.
I come from a family of tempers.
Yes.
That doesn't matter.
Yes. You can be a Joseph and overcome all of that sure. family history. What aspects of your life do you need to be more intentional about?
I put an answer here that's probably pretty transparent, but it is something that I've had to work on. And I think the older we get, the more we learn to do this. But I put not answering questions that haven't been asked. We're talkers.
Yeah.
You know, we like to talk. And you know, it's one thing sitting behind these mics, but when you're talking about the people in your life, especially as I'm getting kids that are older, I got one getting married in less than 3 weeks now, I have to take my dad hat off. Because, I mean, let's be honest, when they're kids, you're going to answer questions whether they ask them or not.
Right.
And learning not to do that, not only in my kids' life, but in other areas of my life, it's not answering questions that haven't been asked.
I get you. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense.
I think that's where God's really working on me lately is just to kind of sum it up, bite your tongue.
Yes. Yeah. You don't have to insert your opinion in every situation.
Right.
That's where.
That's a nice, me saying not answering questions that you haven't been asked is the nice way of saying stay out of it.
Yeah. I get that. Yeah. You know, what I thought about with this question was I really, really need to do a better job of just keeping in touch with and keeping up with friends and relatives. Yeah, I've got relatives that I haven't talked to in years.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this little thing I carry in my pocket mm-hmm. that all I have to do is
you can get in touch with anybody.
I can punch in a couple of numbers and boom, they're right there.
Yeah.
And I have no excuse. And yet I still, I'm busy.
But our excuse is, well, it's a two-way street. They could call me.
And I've used that one.
Yeah.
But it's flimsy. It's really flimsy.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing that I wish I would become more intentional about. From a running standpoint, there's a couple of things that I want to do this year. You know, I've got some lofty goals at the end of this year. From a running standpoint, competitively. And there's a couple of things I got to do. My body, I can feel my body getting weaker as I get older. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, as you get older, your body loses muscle mass.
Sure.
You get weaker, and I can feel it. I mean, there's mm-hmm. things I can't do that I used to be able to do easily. And I've got to strengthen myself. I got to do some things. So I've got to be more consistent about that. I'm really bad about saying I need to do these just a couple of little strength exercises and mobility things that all I got to do is do them.
Yeah.
I just have to do them.
Yeah.
How can you leverage your experiences and knowledge to help or encourage someone else?
So my answer kind of goes back to my previous answer, and it's encourage people with my story versus what I think they should do. Let me explain. So the best way to lead people to Christ is to tell people what Christ about what Christ has done in your life, not say you need Jesus.
Yeah.
And I think there's other areas of my life that I can do that same thing with. Again, it's maybe some of this is coming with the kids getting older, and it's like you have to, I have to change my tune with them. But what it's also showing me is I need to change my tune with others in my life, rather than saying, pointing my finger and saying, you need to do this. Tell them why I don't do that and what that's done in my life. That is much more impactful. The older I get, the more I learn that is so much more impactful than pointing my finger and saying, you need to do this.
Yeah, yeah. I like to think that's what this podcast is.
Sure.
Is using our experience and knowledge to try to encourage.
I mean, we talk about how much we mess up all the time, so I think we've got it covered on this podcast.
It's true. But I love, you know, anytime I get the opportunity. I mean, when we were in Florida last weekend, you know, getting that opportunity just to share what, you know, people ask me all the time that people like to hear my experiences for whatever reason.
They like to hear your story.
And
which,
yeah, and powerful. That's a good thing, whether it's running or spiritual. Mm-hmm. And we definitely should share your story, because a lot of times I think there's a lot of people who, and I'm an introvert. I'm not big on, you notice that, like, you don't ever see my runs posted on Facebook or places like that, because I don't want anybody to think I'm bragging about things. But there's people who want to hear. There's people who want to see it. And fortunately, we have Strava. Now people can go to Strava and they can see everything I do. That's great. Yeah. So, and because that's for a different segment. And I don't feel bad about that.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't. But you need to understand that if you feel like that, as long as you share it with the right heart, people don't think you're...
People that hear the heart come through. Yeah, they for will. Sure.
Do you need something to keep you motivated to keep fit both physically and spiritually? Upward Running has what you need to keep you on track for both. Check out upwardrunning.com and join us for pennies a day. I promise you, you will not regret it. All right, we're back. Have you ever heard of a man named Wim Hof?
Mm-mm.
That's an interesting name, isn't it?
It is.
Wim Hof. He's also known as the Iceman. You may have seen some video of him swimming in places like a lake that's basically frozen all around it, and it's just got a hole for him to swim in. He does these amazing things where he tolerates this incredibly cold weather. He climbed Mount Everest in a pair of only shorts.
Really?
Yes. It's amazing what this guy does. But anyway, he's got this thing, and he calls it the Wim Hof Method. And it's a way of breathing and cold therapy that he says will make you stronger and healthier and boost your immune system, helps you sleep better. It's good for stress and all of these different things. And I got to thinking... I saw a podcast with them. They mentioned him, but they were talking about cold therapy, ice baths, and things like that. And, you know, ice baths are one of the weirdest things to me, because we still don't understand ice baths.
Mm-hmm.
How can we have something that people do every day? I mean, there's somebody in the world doing ice baths every day. I mean,
there's a whole industry now. Cold plunge.
Yes. Yeah. It's a very, very popular thing. And yet, some people say maybe it repairs muscle tissue. Some say maybe it reduces inflammation, but they don't really know.
Right.
How can we have something that we do so much of that we don't know about scientifically? Isn't that the weirdest thing to you? It just blows me away. You got any thoughts on that? I mean, obviously, there's something to it, because people wouldn't do it. I've taken ice baths. It's not comfortable at all.
Maybe it is just placebo, but placebos can actually be helpful.
And that's true.
Do
you think it is just placebo?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know enough about science, but I know enough to be dangerous. But the idea of what it's doing to your vessels, it's constricting your vessels, thus kind of increasing blood flow or blood pressure. to increase blood flow, and the whole secret behind recovery is flushing out lactate, and that is kind of a jump start on recovery. That all makes sense in my head, but whether that's scientific or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it, to me, it logically it makes sense, and therefore I think when people think something logically makes sense, they can wrap their head around it, then a lot of times it will make sense. Or not that it will make sense, that it will work.
Because of the placebo effect.
Right. Yeah. But something can be, I think it can work in the opposite. Something can be very scientific, and if you don't, if you can't wrap your head around it and you don't understand it, you may not benefit from it for this very same reason. It's kind of like the old, when Lane was little and he wanted Zip wheels on his bike, which are carbon fiber wheels that are very expensive. And I knew the science behind it was that it might increase his times by single digit percentages.
Yeah.
But it probably had a 25% because he thought these wheels are fast.
Yeah.
And therefore he went fast. And yeah. So I don't know. I think there is some science behind it though. Maybe they hadn't figured it out, but logically it makes sense.
That's the thing that's weird to me, is that they haven't figured it out, because I do think there's something there. But one of the things that they mentioned that I thought was interesting was they were talking about how people are beginning to put together cold and hot therapy.
Yeah. Contrast.
Which Lane was doing years ago.
Yeah.
He was,
he would have ice in one bathtub and he would have hot Epsom salt in another bathtub. And he would run back and forth four or five times to get that of course, I think there was some studies even back then.
Yeah.
But now there's a lot more, you know. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, plus it just feels good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you sit in a ice bath and it can borderline hurt.
Yeah.
You know, when you jump in hot water.
Yeah, yeah. But, well, what made me really get interested in this was the idea that, you know, right now there's a lot of people that love saunas, and there's a lot of great evidence to say that saunas are really, really good for you. And we were in Florida, and the heat and humidity in Florida took its toll on a bunch of runners that day. I wonder if that bunch of runners that suffered, like Countdown Mary talked about, I wonder if she had been using a sauna for 4 weeks prior to that day, would that have completely changed her race? I don't know that it would, but it's an interesting thought, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we don't have a sauna or anything fancy, but the past two houses I've lived in, I installed a steam generator in our shower.
Yeah.
So it's just a basic shower, except the shower door seals up. And then I've just got, it's just a Kohler steam generator. And yeah, I think that makes, because I use it every time I take a shower. And I mean, it'd get up to 125, 127 degrees in there and 100% humidity. I think for that reason, I think it helps me handle the heat and humidity.
That makes sense.
Better, because I'm doing that every day, but there's nothing scientific there. It's
climatization though, isn't it?
Well, but I'm doing it all the time. Therefore, this is going to help me. Therefore, it actually does, because I think it is. You know,
yeah.
I think the placebo effect is real.
Yeah,
for sure. No question.
I think there's no question about that.
But sure. I don't know that it's the placebo effect, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Surely there's science there.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing that blows me away, is that we still don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I heard this guideline this week that I had never heard before, and it makes sense, because I've heard estimates on ice baths from just how long you should be in an ice bath, from a few minutes to 20 minutes and everything in between. And I thought, that's a pretty big range.
Yeah. Well, I think it depends on how cold it is too.
That's the point here.
Oh, okay.
The guideline that this suggests is it's 1 minute for every degree above zero in Celsius. So 32 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay, well, that lines up exactly what I'm thinking then.
Yeah, 32 degrees Fahrenheit is zero. So 10 degrees Celsius is 50 degrees. So 10 minutes, 50 degree, that's about right.
Yeah. I like to try to get water to 40 degrees, just above 40, and we always did 8 minutes.
Which is about
right. And the crazy thing is it's like all this, you know, I'm not saying we were cutting edge. Maybe we were just great guinea pigs, but, you know, I was wearing the compression socks.
Yeah.
When they were the pantyhose looking things that you get at the hospital.
Yeah.
And now it's a huge industry.
Yeah.
And I and my kids and all of our athletes, we've been preaching ice baths since it was just you go get 40 pounds of ice from the grocery store and you dump it in the bath. Now they have cold plunges and all these, you can set the exact temperature that you want. So maybe we were cutting edge.
Leading it, absolutely.
Yeah, I remember Holly, now people wear compression socks out like as a fashion statement.
And she was mortified when you were
mortified because I'd go to the grocery store and they're like pantyhose. But hey, they worked. Or at least I thought they worked, so they did work.
Absolutely. 100%. That's good stuff. All right. Well, it's a time for Dean's Thoughts. That's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Here's a great story that comes right out of the 1968 Olympic marathon race. It's called Finish the Race. When John Stephen Akwari of Tanzania heard the starter's pistol that signified the beginning of the 1968 Olympic marathon on October 20th at 3 p.m. in Mexico City, Mexico, he had big dreams and high aspirations. As one of the world's best distance runners, he had the chance to prove to the world and himself how good he was. The next 26.2 miles would be the culmination of years of training and would define who he was as an athlete and, as it turns out, as a person. The early stages of the race were typical of many marathons, especially one run at 7,300 feet of altitude in 92-degree heat with the best competition on the planet. No one wanted to take the lead, so the group was packed tightly and there was some jostling. At around 12 miles, one of those incidents resulted in an altering of John Stephen Aquara's plans for the day. He got tangled with another runner and went down hard on the pavement, dislocating his knee. Stopping long enough to put bandages on his knee to stop the profuse bleeding, he got back to his feet and continued. He hobbled and walked the remaining 14 miles of that race, but finished the course, albeit over an hour after the winner, Mamo Walde, crossed the finish line. It would have been easy to stop. No one would have blamed him if he did, but John Stephen Akwara, continued in great pain all the way to the finish line. When a reporter asked him why he was so determined to finish, he said, "My country did not send me 10,000 miles to just start the race. They sent me to finish the race." The circumstances of that race were tough for everyone. One of the 75 runners who started, 18 dropped out. But John Stephen Akwara was not one of them. He set out to finish what he started. Sometimes things don't go as planned. There are obstacles that get in our way that just can't be avoided. An injury, a death or serious injury in the family, a change of job or loss of job, or a million other things that, quite frankly, no one would blame us if we gave up when faced with such challenges. But what would happen if we all had the attitude of a 1968 Tanzanian marathon runner when faced with those challenges? What if we all thought, "I didn't come to back down when faced with hurdles, so let me figure out how to jump over them"? I'm not saying there aren't times when it is appropriate to stop pursuing a goal. Certainly, there are times when that is the best choice to make. But I fear that in today's world, we often give up too easily. And sometimes we need to be more focused on finishing the race. It's not how you start the race that counts, or even how you negotiate the course as you run. It's that you finish the race. God placed us in a race when we learned about who He is and the majesty and grace that He brings to our lives every day. He has entered us into a race that leads to eternity. He didn't send us to simply start the race. He sent us to finish the race. Paul talks about finishing his race on earth in 2 Timothy 4:7. "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith." No matter where you are in your race today, whether you've been distracted away from the course or you've fallen and are hurting terribly, whether it is your fault or someone intentionally tripped you up, let John Stephen Akwari's words resonate in your head. Finish your race with intentionality, no matter if you have to do it running, walking, or limping. Fix your eyes on Jesus and finish your race.
Man, that's a great story. I've never heard that.
It's a cool story, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a great answer to a question. They didn't send me here just to start. Can you imagine running at 7,300 feet in 92 degrees?
That's
brutal conditions. Yeah. You know what the winning time was that year?
What's that?
2:20.
Really?
Yes. But you can imagine. I mean, talk about brutal conditions.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you've heard me talk about my disdain for runners dropping out.
Yeah.
Like at the highest level when they're only dropping out because the day just didn't go as they wanted and they're trying to save themselves for another race. There's part of my brain gets that, but then there's part of my brain that sees John Aquari. I respect this way more.
Yeah.
Because of the story we're still talking about today.
Yeah.
We're not talking about those guys that dropped out.
Nope, we never did.
We're not even talking about the winner of that race.
Yeah.
We're talking about the guy who dislocated his knee and still finished. Those are the best stories.
Yeah. 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 It's a good one. And I mean, imagine not only do you hurt yourself and it's hard to get up and keep going, but I'm just thinking about the amount of sweat and the fact that it's hard to breathe and everything else. And he's just going to, I'm getting to the finish line. But, you know, if you've trained for something and this is your dream to go to the Olympics, I can see how you'd be driven to finish it as well.
You said he finished an hour behind the leader, so 3:20.
Yeah.
He dislocated his knee and still ran a 3:20.
That's true.
That's sickening.
Yeah. I know, right?
That makes my PR seem like just.
Yeah, it said he walked part of it. So.
Yeah, that's demoralizing. But it's an incredible story.
Yeah. Well, I had forgotten about this story until this past week, and then I ran up on it and thought it was cool. So I did acknowledge in this, though, that there are times when it does make sense to stop. So don't hear me say never, ever, ever stop in the middle of anything ever, because there are times where an injury is bad enough that you're going to make it worse if you keep going or whatever. But, you know, just recently, you know, I had some trouble with my shin.
Mm-hmm.
And what most people would say is they would say you should stop running because it feels like it could be a stress fracture. Mm-hmm. You need to stop running right away.
Right.
And I didn't. And now I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't a stress fracture, even though it felt like it. I don't know. I just don't like to quit.
Yeah.
And I think when you do that too often, I think you get in the habit of doing that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a terrible habit to get into.
Yeah, I mean, we used to talk about this with the tri team. You know, there's lots of things you can do that don't make physical sense. It doesn't make sense on a training plan to do this workout.
Yeah.
But we used to call them character builders.
Mm-hmm.
And I think anytime you get to that place in a race or during a workout and you just feel like you can't go anymore, what that does for you, for your spirit, for your grit, is far exceeds anything negative it's going to do to your body.
Yep.
I mean, I think about you, and you're such a good friend, and you threw it in my face a while ago. I think about the one time that you and I were doing a tempo run, and I quit. Plain and simple, I quit, and I walked off the track, and you were like, you're going to hate yourself tomorrow. You know, because we lovingly tell each other things
That's right.
like this. You said, you're going to hate yourself tomorrow. And the person I was hating right then was you.
Yeah.
But you knew because you'd been there and you knew that, hey, if you'll get out here and finish this, which I didn't, and I did regret it the next day.
Mm-hmm.
But anytime we can do something that doesn't make physical sense, it's almost always going to make sense in our head.
That's a good point. Here's the way I look at it. What's your default? Is your default to keep going no matter how hard it is, or is your default to quit when it gets hard? If your default is keep going no matter how hard it is, and then occasionally you have to stop, okay, then you probably should stop mm-hmm. in those cases. But if your default is quit at the first sign of stress, then you got to change that default.
Because again, in the same way that pushing through that bleeds over to every area of your life, so will that.
Yes.
If you learn to just start giving up in fitness, you'll learn to start giving up in lots of things. Well, that's right. Just too hard. I'm not going to do that.
That's right.
And that's not where any of us want to be.
That's right. And if you, in practice, if your first thought when things get hard during a hard run or a workout or something, if your first attitude is bear down that much harder, mm-hmm. guess what's going to happen when you're in the middle of a race and you start to hurt? Mm-hmm. You're going to think bear down that much harder.
Or guess what you're going to do when you're going through something at work?
Yes.
And it's hard. You know, we're in a quitting society. They call it quiet quitting nowadays. Can't stand that term.
Yeah.
But, and that's why. It's because we've become, I guess, soft, maybe as some of our society. And we need to do more of what we're talking about here. We need double down.
Yep.
I'm going to make it hurt twice as hard so that what was hurting doesn't feel like it's hurting. You know?
Yeah.
And that is a good way to look at things. Now, can that get you injured? Maybe.
Good.
But you got to be smart about it. But I think too many times, me included, our default is, well, I don't have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a dangerous place to go.
It is. Have you always wanted to read through the entire Bible but never found the time to do it? Well, let me do it for you. Sign up for the self-paced Bible in a Year challenge and start listening today. Every day, I read a few chapters from the Bible and give you helpful tips and encouraging quotes. You must be an Upward Running member for access to this exciting challenge. So if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, what are you waiting for? Every week, I share a reason why running and or walking are so awesome. And this week, I want to talk about our focus. It helps our focus. You know, focusing during a marathon, really hard. You're in a hard workout, trying to keep your focus during that workout and not let it wander to, oh, this hurts and that kind of thing. You're focused on what you're doing is hard. And I think that learning to really focus when you're doing something that's hard like that, I think it helps you to focus just like we were just talking about.
Sure.
It helps you focus on other things. That thing at work, if you can focus on those 400s when you still have five more to go and it really, really hurts, then I think that when that thing happens at work that's hard and you can't figure out how to fix a problem, I think it helps you to focus on that problem. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it makes your focus fitter. How do you like that?
Pretty clever, Dean.
Well, we have world records galore.
What is going on?
I do not know, but I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
It is crazy. Did you see the half marathon record?
No, I didn't see it. I heard about it. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
He broke the – Jacob Kiplimo, he's Ugandan. He broke the world record for the half marathon by 48 seconds.
And somebody had just broken it just a few weeks ago, right?
Not the half marathon. Well, they might have, but it was 1 second.
Oh, it was the American.
It was American. Yeah,
American
record.
The world. Yeah.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, it's still like records are just dropping everywhere.
He ran 56:41. You know what the American record that we just set was?
What's that?
59:21.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, it's almost 3 minutes difference. Yeah. Do you know what the average pace is for a 56:41 is? It's 419 point something.
Yeah.
The idea that somebody can run 13 sub 420 miles in a row is just absolutely crazy. Mm. But he did it. I don't know. And there were, you know, we just had the 3,000. We've had an American record in the 800, indoor 800. We've had a world records in the 3,000, 1,500, and mile. Indoors, and then just this past weekend,
back-to-back mile records.
Yes, and then Grant Fisher just broke the world record in the 5K indoors. He ran 12:44 indoors.
Yeah,
for the 5K. So I don't know what's going on, but you know, there's several factors that are obvious. You know, the shoes are better, the tracks are better. You have pacing lights these days that make it easier to stay on pace. And that definitely makes you more efficient, but it seems like it's got to be something more than that. for sure. And I don't know what it is. We talked about sodium bicarbonate last mm-hmm. week. Mm-hmm. I don't think that answers it. And maybe it's all those things together. But you know what I think? I think is the biggest thing that is making these people faster nowadays. It is the shoes, but it's not what you think. It's not the fact that the shoes help you to race faster. It's that the shoes allow you to train harder mm-hmm. and not be as fatigued when you get through with that hard workout. Hmm. And I think you can recover faster from workout to workout. And so you can work harder. It's, you know, that's what steroids do, mm-hmm. right? Steroids sure. don't make you a better athlete. Steroids allow you to train to be a better athlete. Right. And that's what these shoes are doing. They're helping you train to be a better athlete. And I wonder if that, but it's weird how it's all come together all at one time, like it has.
Yeah. And so you can't think of anything kind of earth shattering in the past year that's, you can look back and say, oh, I bet it was that.
I can't.
That kind of tipped the scales.
I can't. No. I mean, you know, we had the Olympics last year, and a lot of times a lot of people focus on in an Olympic year. And so maybe it's the ultra focus of so many athletes all at one time, and now all that's coming together with the competitiveness of.
I wonder if it. I mean, obviously, I think it's all of the above. And this isn't this. Maybe this isn't a new concept, but I think we have this group of athletes. I think this concept has been in place since they were young. So they've had this mentality since they were very young, and it's kind of they're coming to the peak of their careers, having done these things their whole life. But it's the idea. I was watching. It was a I forget what it was. It was a golfing documentary, and they were talking about. The drive nowadays. I mean, the driver, I mean, it's not going to be long that somebody's going to hit the ball 400 yards.
Yeah.
Where just 25 years ago, I mean, you were killing it at 300.
Yeah.
Almost 25% more. And yes, technology is a huge benefactor. Just like technology, track surfaces, shoes for running. But the one thing that they attribute the drive to, I mean, because like, what's the Northern Ireland guy's name? I can't remember his name.
Oh, I can't remember either.
You know who I'm talking
about.
I know
who you're talking about, though. Yeah.
I mean, he crushes the ball. He's not that big of a guy.
Yeah.
But they talk about how this group of athletes, golfers nowadays, they've grown up with these very specialized workouts. You know, early on, it was just you went in the gym, you did bench press, but they showed their workout routines where their workouts, like with medicine balls and things like that, they're doing the exact motions, and they're working those motions out. And when I watched the sprint series on Netflix, the track, I saw a lot of that same thing. They didn't focus on it, but I wonder if that's some of it, that we've the people that are at their peak right now. They have grown up, and those muscle movements and everything, I don't know if that has anything to do with it.
It's an interesting thought. A more specialized training.
More specialized training.
Over a long period of time.
More specialized workouts working on very specific muscles, which is exactly what they're doing in the golf world.
Yeah.
You know, John Daly could hit the ball 320 yards 25 years ago.
Yeah.
But now these guys, gosh, what is his name? It's blowing my mind.
But he could probably hit it close to 400 these days.
No,
John
he couldn't.
Daly. You don't think so?
No, because
you don't think the equipment would let him do that?
No. They say it's not. It wouldn't even be close.
Okay.
It's because of these guys very specific. You know how with a bow and arrow, you've shot bows, huh?
Yeah.
You know, guys that can pull back 100-pound draw weight.
Yeah.
Most of the time, they're not very big guys. Where if you took a huge bodybuilder. They could never pull back that 100 pounds because it's very specialized movements, that's muscles.
Good
so
analogy.
That's a long answer to a short question. I wonder if that has something to do with it, that these athletes now have been so specialized from a very young age. And now all those, because, you know, a lot of muscle groups, they don't fully mature until your 20s, late 20s even.
Yeah.
And if those people are just now coming into, I don't know.
Could be. Could be. It's an interesting thought. I just hope and pray that it's not something nefarious.
Well, but the fact that it's such a diverse group of people.
Well, it makes you wonder if there's a new drug out there or something that, you know.
It's not on anybody's radar.
Yeah. But you would think that somebody would know about it if that were the case, if there was something new out there that, you know, somebody would be talking about it.
But there would at least be accusations.
Yeah. Yeah. So I hope that's not the case. So, you know, we remember back in the cycling days when, you know, at the peak of Lance Armstrong, and we found out that they were all, you know, they're all doing it, you know, and it's like, that was so disappointing.
Yeah.
But in track and field, the sad part is, it's sort of like baseball. I remember back in the day, the steroid days of baseball, you know, when Barry Bonds hit over 70 home runs, and it was because of what they were doing that was nefarious, and it ruined the record books. The record books are completely obliterated. They don't mean anything anymore because of what they did in that era.
Yeah, but let me bounce this off of you and see if it holds weight, because I'm just thinking this through right now. But so, yes, when you get into the pros and things like that, you start to wonder about those things. But for the reasons that I just laid out, is that not part of the reason that high schoolers seem to be somewhat faster nowadays? Have high school times, let's say world records for high schoolers, have they dropped even
more than professionals have?
So that makes me think. I mean, I don't think there's high schoolers all over the world that are on drugs.
We just had
high schoolers are much more specialized nowadays than they were. Because back in the day, everybody played basketball, football, baseball, ran track. Where now, if those track athletes that are stars, they've been doing this since they were very young, pretty much all year round.
Yeah, but more than that, I mean, we just had a sophomore, a high school sophomore that just ran 146 for the 800. I mean, that's getting close to world class. I mean, that's a Division I college, you know, best in some Division I colleges.
Yeah.
And he's a high school sophomore? That seems weird to me. I wonder if it has something to do with the food we're eating. You know, we talk about how bad our food is. Is there a I don't want to say a positive side, but is a lot of the steroids and stuff they're shooting chickens up with, is that getting into us and making us stronger and faster? I don't know. Is that a crazy
thing? People are definitely bigger.
Yes. Yeah. Is that why? I don't know. Is that helping us be faster?
I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah, 350-pound lineman in high school nowadays is not uncommon.
Yeah,
unheard of. That 25 years ago.
That was bigger than the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah. Now they're 400-pounders on the line in the pros.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I remember seeing it. It's the average offensive line is now 100 pounds heavier than it was, I think they said, 25 or 30 years ago.
Yeah, it doesn't explain the weight, but I think the speed, it just has to do with specializing early. Yeah. And I'm on the fence. You know, there's a lot of people out there that says, don't let kids specialize. I'm on the fence there. I can see the pros, but I can see the cons. Lane and I, we had the conversation every year. You don't have to. He wanted to do what he was doing.
Yeah.
And he was very specialized and became very successful as a result of it.
Yeah.
So
I go back and forth on the specialization thing too, but I think we're seeing a tide turn on specialization, because I think for years, the best athletes in the world were not specialized athletes. They did a lot of sports when they were young. They didn't just specialize in one thing, but I think we're starting to see the results of those specialized athletes.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think you're starting to see it now.
These guys coming to the pros, it's kind of the first generation of specialized athletes. Mm-hmm. I mean, Engelbrechtsen, how old is he? He's in his mid-20s?
Early 20s.
Yeah.
23, I think.
So, I mean, he's he's in that range. I mean, because even the generation right before Lane in the sport of triathlon, like Hunter Kemper,
yeah,
you know, he bragged about he played a lot of sports growing up, and so that 20 to 25 year bracket there, that's really your first generation.
Yeah,
because I mean, you think 25 years ago, that was the start of year-round baseball and travel leagues and all that stuff, and for that reason, I bet you if you took some statistics in the world of baseball, baseball players are much better coming into the pros now than they were 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
If you just took statistics of however they measure baseball, I bet it's better because the kids are so much more advanced than they were. And with running, or with any sport, you've got a window. You've got a narrow window to be at peak performance.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thought is this. When you think about football, how do you measure whether football players are better now than they were 30 years ago? There's no way to measure it because you're getting better on the offensive and the defensive side.
Right.
So you can't really tell. You know they're getting better, but you can't really tell. But in track and field, you can tell because it's time. It's
very objective.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an interesting thought.
I don't know.
All right. Good discussion. How about a trivia question for this week? I said I'd get back to this, and I am going to get back to it. Here's the question. Why is the marathon 26 miles, 285 yards, or 42 kilometers, 195 meters? If you know the answer to that, send that to dean@upward.org, and if you're the first member to send that to me, you will win $20 off in the store. So I know you know that story. It's a fun story. Mm-hmm. So send that to me. Look it up. Even if you don't answer it, look it up.
Yeah.
Because it's a cool story. Our motivational thought of the week comes from Mina Samuels, the book Run Like a Girl. She said, "Our running shoes have magic in them. The power to transform a bad day into a good day. Frustration into speed. Self-doubt into confidence. Chocolate cake into muscle." That's pretty good. I like that.
That quote was going good though, that last line.
It just
I don't think that's
one
how
of these
that works.
Is not like the other. But yeah, you know, if you can get your mind wrapped around the fact that if you go out and enjoy it, running, walking, exercise, it'll make all the difference.
I'm going to try that out tonight. I'm going to eat me a Reese and tell Hollywood. Dean said it would turn into muscle.
Yeah, do that.
I do that.
Well, Dean didn't say it. Mina said it.
Yeah, Mina.
Yeah.
Said it.
Yeah, yeah. And she can just call Mina if she doesn't like it. I mean, I
wonder if Mina is from Finland. A Finnish name, Mina.
I don't know. Well, make sure you share our podcast. Get others on board. We need a bunch of people listening to this because, you know, we're trying to share Jesus. Mm-hmm. And the more people that hear about Jesus, the better.
Sure.
So so help us with that. And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.